1 ana, which is roughly 12 rupees in today's purchasing power, used to be the selling price of one Kalighat pot painting during the early 20th century. It is not a princely sum, right? Do you think an artist should have spent much time in painting one such picture? Too much effort would have made it unviable. It was a matter of volume with wafer-thin margin. Quantity was the factor, not quality. That is why hallmark of Kalighat paintings were swift strokes of black curves and very little shade on the edges of the objects or people to give an impression of volume or depth. Details were sacrificed for the sake of pace of production. The route of elimination of details was not Matisse-like urge to simplify, but to rule out as many paintings as possible in rapid succession. Hence, comparing Jamini Roy's painting style with that of Matisse is a sign of being a victim of visual illusion, I think. Jamini Roy was not driven by blind passion to express. He was simply a very successful art strategist with a magical sense of balance of shapes and forms as well as color composition. Yes, he borrowed the style of Kalighat Potchitra almost in totality and then modified it a little for better effect, nothing more. Welcome to my podcast Art Beyond Canvas. If you enjoy listening to my story of art, please click the bell icon and follow me. To understand the relevance of Jamini Roy in the context of time and space, we must have a look at one folk art that is long dead now. 19th and the first half of 20th century Bengal was subjected to a sweeping wave of new media unprecedented at the time. Woodcut, lithograph, oleograph, printing, photography, and finally cinema invented a plethora of machine-made images or reproductions. Pictures of gods, goddesses, renowned personalities on postcards, calendars, product labels, newspapers, textbooks crowded the marketplace. Besides, entered the British culture and lifestyle, the onslaught of a new and tempting yet apparently insidious charm of Western outlook began to contaminate the aboriginal ways of life. This led to a new form of folk art. On scrolls or single sheets of paper, the patois began to capture the changing face of the society. Often accompanied with a verbal narration, such scrolls described the degeneration of the legacy of life in Bengal. Well, not always degeneration, but at times just a depiction. The art forms were rough and symbolic, with crude strokes of brush. But the uniqueness was in the peculiar blending of the hint of mythical elements in a contemporary setup, or vice versa. It is important because we shall see exactly such blending of forms and spirit in the paintings of Jamini Roy. We must remember then that the idea of blending was not something new during the mid-20th century when Jamini Roy appeared with his legendary paintings. However, let us look back again. When those patois were capturing the current affairs on paper, the British embarked on an elaborate venture of documenting the lives and geography of India. Many British painters were employed to paint people, flora and fauna, animals, as well as landscapes of significance so that the government could develop a comprehensive idea about the subjects and their land. These Britishers painted in watercolor, unlike the natives who used tempera. Since the demand of such paintings was high for the limited number of British artists on the job, the Indians were also employed to do the same. Watercolor entered the Indian world of art. Even if it is unlikely that the patois were employed in this task, yet they must have been exposed to the medium of watercolor. At this point, let me mention that in 18th century, a Kali temple was built on a remote marshland on the bank of Ganges. But soon, the words about its miraculous power got around. the Kali temple turned into an important destination of devotees. Thousands of pilgrims visited the temple. Naturally, a market soon grew around it, catering to the need of the lower middle class crowd so that they could take back some memento. And among the mementos, there appeared stalls selling paintings. That is how Kalighat pot painting came into existence. We don't know exactly how the erstwhile Patuas transformed their painting style into that of Kalighat, but when they painted for Kalighat, the forms and shapes were different. Moreover, the medium was no more tempera but watercolor. It is likely that watercolor was an import from the British. But as I mentioned in the beginning of this chapter, Kalighat catered to a customer base of moderate means. Hence, the paintings sold for pittance. There was no luxury of painting them painstakingly. Pace was the essence. Hence, as said already, the paintings depicting animals, birds, fishes, snakes, current affairs with sarcasm or sensation were mainly dependent on broad, swift strokes and very little shades to give an impression of volume or depth. The draftsmanship improved radically compared to the earlier folk paintings on scroll. But as the machines began to roll out more and more paintings at cheaper rates, Kalighat paintings grew even simpler and slapdash, revolving mainly around the rapid strokes. And finally, around mid-20th century, Kalighat pot painting ceased to exist. Machines killed it. Jamini Roy was born in 1887 in a wealthy family of landlord in a village of West Bengal. A sizable population of the village was Santhal tribes. Until he went to the government school of art in Calcutta at the age of 16, he had lived among the Santhal tribes, watching them paint and sculpt. After art college, Jamini Roy launched his career as an artist. He began painting portraits of the elites of Kolkata. He painted in the academic style of the British. But in a while, he felt that the entire process was incomplete in a way. He commented later that while painting the portrait of a man's face, the artist had to focus on the face only. While painting the lower part of the man, the artist focused on the lower part of the man. At any point of time, most of the man was missing from view. But only when the man left the field of vision of the artist, the complete man appeared on the viewport of the mind. He felt that the academic painting technique was inadequate. This realization of Jamini Roy sounds great, but there might be another reason behind his moving away from portraiture. He understood that painting portraits was unlikely to earn him significant fame or money. In some time, he shifted to landscapes in the styles of the Forbes. His landscapes came with thick patches of bright paints. In fact, a few landscapes by Vlaminck and Jamini Roy appear very similar, as if Jamini Roy had painstakingly replicated the strokes of Vlaminck. At this point, let us take a little pause. The similarity of Jamini Roy's paintings with those of Vlaminck implies that Jamini Roy was deeply familiar and influenced by the Fauvist ways, and the primary flag bearer of Fauvism was Matisse. We shall get back to the relevance of Matisse little later. So, he tried his luck with landscapes for many years without success. His Fauve-style paintings failed to make a mark. It was in 1931 that he organized his first major exhibition of paintings in the style we are familiar with. He was 44 years old then. Hence, we can imagine that his journey of long 2 decades after completing his art college training did not make him a successful artist. But this exhibition proved to be a grand success. It touched the pulse of the art lovers of Kolkata. But why? What did he really do? He knew he had to do something different, yet catch the attention and fancy of the population. Going with Bengal school did not make sense. Bengal school already lost spirit because their war against the Western academia lost appeal. While the West itself revolted against its own academic style, how come Bengal school war be relevant against the West? The Impressionists and Expressionists already proved victors against the illusionistic realism of the West. Enemies, enemies, friend. Hence, the modern ways of the West were no more enemies. In fact, Rabindranath Tagore himself embraced Expressionism. Hence, Jamini Roy was looking for another way not followed so far. The country was boiling with nationalist spirit. He must paint something pulsating with the nation's own aboriginal tradition. And right there, he found the Patuas of Kalighat on the verge of extinction under the grind of machines. Also, there was a resentment among the Indians about the destruction of tribal art and culture by the onslaught of Western lifestyle. But had he simply replicated the Kalighat paintings, there would not be any ripple. He had to add the flavor of his formal learning of draftsmanship. He refined the strokes. He retained the elongated eyes. And the lack of details in Kalighat paintings offered him a great possibility. The Fauves like Matisse had eliminated such details in their paintings. In fact, Matisse's paintings grew perpetually simpler without any shade or complex details. And Matisse was a living legend, a proven success. Jamini Roy did exactly that. He did away with the little shades that the Kalighat Patuas applied. The empty spaces were filled up with flat, bright colors. And soon, to add even intense native charm, he stopped painting in oil. Not watercolor imported by the British, but he took up tempera. Jamini Roy began to prepare his own paints and canvases at times. He often painted on clothes meant for his own use. The story was complete in all sense. The nationalist spirit was tickled by his going back to the Indian tradition. The elegant strokes of Jamini Roy made the painting stand strikingly superior to those of Kalighat. The bright color combinations of blue, red, brown, borrowed from the Kalighat and folk style, resounded of the past. The paintings, devoid of any deeper meaning or personal expression of the artist, fell in line with the idea of communism too. The communists felt that the artworks were not individualistic. Those were for the masses. No special faculty was needed to appreciate them. In fact, the paintings smelt of soil and sweat of the struggling Patuas. Hence, Jamini Roy's career took off as an artist of great fortune. In fact, the Western attention he received was supposedly due to the connection of his communist friends. Over a period of time, he moved away from Kalighat style as far as content was concerned, because Kalighat pot paintings dealt with the affairs in the city life, which was polluted by the Western values. Jamini Roy got more and more restricted to images influenced by terracotta artifacts and Santhal paintings. Perhaps such motifs had a stronger appeal of Indianness. Now, one can infer that the artist had a deep attachment to village life and tribal folks. He wanted to save the dying art and culture of Bengal. This suggestion seems conflicting with his choice of location to build a house at Baliganj Place in Calcutta. Baliganj Place used to be one of the most expensive and posh part of the city. How come he did not choose to settle among the tribes as Goga did in Haiti Island if he had such sense of belonging to them? Moreover, why did his empathy for the tribes not surface for long 2 decades? Of course, we cannot deny his connection with the potters and tribal artists of Bankura. He grew up there, and by the way, he did not paint in folk style abruptly at the age of 44. He did the same earlier too, off and on, in a different way that did not hit much commercial success. If you look for Santhal paintings by Jamini Roy, you can easily find it. We can see the transformation taking place gradually. There was a mix of shades as well as flat colors both in the Santhal style paintings. It was the slow emergence of stylistic strategy that marks the trajectory of the development of Jamini Roy's signature style. It was not the reflection of his emotion, but a matter of factly synthesis of forms and coloring pattern that would finally rhyme with the spirit of the art market during that time. In a nutshell, what Jamini Roy did was a unique blend of folk and tribal art with Matisse-like flat patches of color. His branding strategy was so robust that he never violated the classic rule. They say that after seeing a logo or image more than 7 times, the consumer finally thinks of buying it. Once the format was fixed, Jamini Roy never altered it. Even when the world was being devastated by the violence of the Second World War, his paintings did not show anything other than the earthly charm of terracotta pottery or Santhal folk art depicting cats, cows, birds, dancing village girls, housewives, and so on. Well, I must not miss out the Jesus Christ, of course. Only I fail to understand how his concern for the Santhals or Patuas might have been linked up with Jesus Christ, while he was just trying to rekindle the pristine spirit of our village. Well, maybe some of his Christian patrons wanted some Christ in his signature style. In the end, Jamini Roy's insight of art was profound. His draftsmanship was outstanding. His sense of balance of shape and color was unparalleled, but it is impossible to say that he did anything new. He was a master of remixing styles, and he knew how to tickle the market and capitalize the maximum out of it at the expense of emotion and expression. Naturally, he was famous. So many factors to ring the forgotten bells. Moreover, no effort was needed to appreciate the beauty of the images. Probably no other Indian artist painted as many paintings as he did in his career. But it is a no-brainer that his entire model of art production was geared for pace driven by standardization. We can no way consider Jamini Roy to be a game-changer of the world of art. But we can look up to him to learn what makes an artist tick in the volatile jungle of creative market. In my following episode, I shall talk about such an artist who could have made Jamini Roy redundant, yet he vanished into the blackness of anonymity and ignominy, and more so because he entered the cosmic sphere of the legend. Jamini Roy.